You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Goodness, it is The Dice Men Cometh. And what day is it, Mark?
It's Thursday, Garth.
And what episode is it, Mark?
It's episode 182, Garth.
182, and I do want to do a big shout-out to Trent and Mark.
Mark's here. He's the guy you're looking at.
Oh, dear. Let's just go Trent and Leon, then, because they are this week's Dice Men in absentia. They are not particularly important to us at the moment, but Trent is in Japan pretending to be either a sumo warrior or just eating all the sushi that he can. Yes. And Leon, God knows what he does, something with knees and arms up to chocolate, and that's about it.
Yeah, but we don't need them.
We don't need them.
We can do this without them.
So welcome to this show, which is Australia's number one radio show and podcast, all about board games and card games and dice games. Any other games that are fit to put on a table, near a table, in a lounge room?
Role-playing games?
Yeah.
iOS games?
I hope so.
All those great games. But tonight, Garth,
what have we got on?
We have a fair bit on. We're going to talk about some storytelling games. I'm going to tell a bit of a story about what a storytelling game is. And in particular, we're going to talk about one we've played lately, Legends of Andor.
Okay.
You're going to tell us a bit about some of the new releases, perhaps.
There are a crap ton of releases on the iOS and Android platforms. Can't leave Android out.
We're going to talk even more about storytelling games because there's so many more than just Legend of Andor. And we're going to draw our competition.
With thanks to Grail Games and good friend of the show, David Harding.
Oh, yes.
We've got those couple of copies of King's Road. We've got a copy of Medici, the card game. They will be travelling around the country or the world. We'll see who wins tonight.
We've got all that and banter, just witty banter.
Really? It has been lacking a little bit lately.
I hope so. I hope we'll have banter and music. And games and fun and, all that.
And all of it is possible, in part, with thanks to Area 52, which is our local friendly game store where we go to buy our games, especially for this particular episode.
Oh, yes.
So they're on 104 Elizabeth Street. They are very close to getting an online store, which will be interesting.
Ooh.
But they are in there. They've got so many games. They've actually got a really big delivery lately, which was kind of good. I tried to put in a little bit of a bid for a Fantasy Flight Mixed Mystery Box. Ooh. They'd put a little post on Facebook saying, here are all the games we've got, and just posted box after box after box. You could tell it was Fantasy Flight, and you could tell there was a box of Catan.
Wow.
Tried to say, I'll take my $20. And I'll take that Fantasy Flight box off your hand, but they wouldn't have it. Anyway, we're going to throw to a song. We're going to come back, and Mark, you're going to talk about Legends of Andy?
Yeah.
All right, you're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Well, there you go. That was Chocolate Bedrock with Leave the Radio On. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
You better leave the radio on because, Garth, we are on it.
We are.
Although, thanks to our friendly local game store, Area 52. Not only can you get your board games there, but also your comics. Don't forget, Thursdays is Comics Day.
That's today.
That's right. Even though you and I aren't big comics men, Leon and Trent are the big comic men. But, yeah, you can buy comics there, all your pop culture, all your other things that the young people want these days, Garth.
Oh, there's so much magic. There's so much D&D that happens there now these times every night. Anyway, they've had their bit. It's time for us to shine. And Mark?
And we will.
It's now your moment.
Oh, okay. Well, this week we have been playing, and believe it or not, this is a game we actually played
we
this week.
We did play it
not
this
at
week.
BorderCon.
At where?
Exactly. Legends of Andor. Now, this is one I've had my eye on for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
I did play it once at a Hogs Night many years back.
Okay. So not a new game then?
Well, it came out in 2012, believe it or not, and it's designed by Michael Menzel. Now, that's a very famous name in the board game industry, but not for game design, because he is an artist. He's probably, if I can be so bold, he's probably the Ian O'Toole of 4, 5, 6 years ago, where all the great new Euro games that were coming out, many, I would have said more than half of them would have had boards, boxes, and a lot of art in the game designed and drawn by Michael Menzel. He's an amazing artist.
Gotcha.
He's done a lot of the art for this game, and Michaela kindly has also done some of it, but he's the designer.
Yep. So is this his first change from being a design, an artist into actually game design?
This is, in fact, the only game he's ever designed, except for...
An expansion.
No. Well, he's designed other expansions for this game, and I'll talk about those in a little while, but he's recently designed Phase 10 Junior.
Okay, I don't know that one.
Well, do you know Phase 10, the card game?
I do know Phase 10, the card game.
Like you know, effectively. Yes. So Phase 10 Junior, I believe, is they've replaced the numbers with pictures where they're animals or the pool emoji or whatever.
So you've taken a very simple game and made it that little bit more simple.
Exactly. Okay. So apart from that one, which is just this year, this is his only game design.
So either the royalties are very, very good from sales of Legends of Andor, so that he doesn't have to work anymore, or he's gone back into board game art, or independently wealthy.
Well, look, you know, let's talk about a bit of the success he had with this game. His first ever game design.
Yep.
He won, so before it was even published, he received the 2012 Luca Games Best Publishing Project winner.
Okay.
Then in 2013, when this game sort of had been out for a little while, he won the French Game of the Year, the Spanish Game of the Year.
Wow.
The Italian Game of the Year. And the Spiel des Jahres Kennerspiel, so the more complex game.
The gamer's game.
Which was huge. The Netherlands Game of the Year. That was actually in 2014. They must have been a little bit slow to get it across the border there. he also won the Graf Ludo, which I hadn't come across that one before. That's a German award for art in games.
Oh, you should go to that award. That is absolutely your award.
It is, right, isn't it? So he won the Best Family Game Graphics. It was also nominated in 2013 for the Best Thematic Board Game on the Golden Geek Awards and also the Best Board Game Artwork. So for a first-time game designer, that's a pretty good resume.
Not a bad
start.
He won
all those European awards, and it is definitely a Euro game, but it's a Euro game with a difference because it's a Euro storytelling game.
Well, tell us more.
And, we, you know, we are going to talk a bit more about storytelling game, but you sort of, you mostly think about storytelling games. You think of your American-style games, your fantasy flights, your... Yeah, we'll talk about those in a minute because I've got a whole bunch of things to say about that. But so this is, I'd describe it as a cooperative campaign game.
Yep.
With a story that develops through the use of these legend cards, because it's called the Legends of Andor.
Mm.
Now, it also has this time mechanism where during your turn you have 7 daylight hours and 3 night hours. And that gives you an opportunity to do some actions. So each action takes an hour. So with your action, you can move, you can fight, you can wait, which means you sort of want someone else to catch up, or you can move an ally. Now, we haven't actually come across any allies yet. Because, spoiler alert, we've only played the tutorial scenario. So, you know... That's why I guess this isn't a review. This is just talking about the game.
It is. And we will definitely
play it more. That's right. You also have some free actions. So, hang on. I think I'm jumping forward a bit.
Like you're jumping a long way forward. Yeah, what the hell is this game about, so, except for Legends?
That's right. So, it's about a medievally type, fantasy type, generic land.
You've got your elves and you've got your dwarves and you've got your archers and your warriors and your clerics
and your
monsters. Those traditional tropes.
Yeah.
And you're in that fantasy setting laid out on a very beautiful double-sided board.
Yes, that's right.
Where you've got a castle in one corner and you've got forests for where the elves start and you've got mines for where the dwarves start.
Yep.
And you've got a whole bunch of stuff going on.
Yeah, and you're basically, you're travelling around this countryside doing... Well, you don't really know until you flip that very first legend card and it tells you what your objective is.
And it says, welcome to the tutorial mission.
That's right. But, you know, the story is Some king had something go wrong, put out a call for some adventurers, and that's about all you need to know. Just because the legends are going to tell the story. And so these legend cards, each round, if you like, you're going to flip over a new legend card, and it's going to start telling you a little bit of the story. Also, during the turn, if you kill a monster, you move up the little legends marker on the legends track. Now, some spots on the legends track, depending on which legend you're playing, will make you roll over a new card. Some won't. Will. So there's that interesting timing mechanic of not only do you get a certain number of rounds to complete the game, but if you kill, the more you kill monsters, the faster the game goes. So sometimes you don't want to run around and kill monsters because you won't have enough time to complete your objective.
No, but I think given the fact that we're talking about the tutorial, it's something that anyone with this game will play or would have played. So we can talk about a little bit in that.
Yeah,
we won't spoil it.
Yeah.
But you're a band of whatever characters you've chosen.
Merry people.
And you are under the employment of the prince, and you're trying to stop the hordes invading his castle. And that's what you're trying to do at the start of the campaign.
That's right.
And it introduces the mechanics, which will be very simply movement. Very simply, if you go and enter any one of the, I guess they're the river tiles, the tiles that border the river that joins the main part of the board. You'll reveal a token, and it'll be a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah, so the fog tokens.
Yeah.
And they might flip them over and they give you stuff. Yeah.
They might give you something, and that's where the something can be really important, because in this game you've got, I guess, two major tracks that you've got to keep an eye on, and that's your strength and your willpower.
Yes, yes.
And really that's what you're looking at, especially when it comes into those battle scenarios that are going to happen.
And so there is quite a lot of battling in this, fighting.
Yes.
And, you know, unusually for a Euro game, sometimes you're rolling fistfuls of dice, but the interesting thing is it's not like, oh, you roll five or six dice and you add them all together. It's you roll one or two or three or four or five or six dice, and then you just pick the highest die.
You do.
And that adds to your strength, and that gives you your battle score, if you like. And then you have monsters. They all have the different types of monsters have a certain type of strength. They'll roll a certain number of dice depending on what sort of monster they are. And they are strangely generic monsters with strange names. So instead of orcs and goblins and trolls and things, you've got
gore
and Sklar and other strange names that you can't pronounce. But they're all very orky, goblin-y looking monsters.
Yes. Anyone who has read or watched any kind of fantasy will go, I know what these things are. Let's us go and squish them.
Yeah, so it's quite a simple battle mechanic where basically it's your strength plus your best die against the monster's strength and their best die. You can team up, which you sort of, as we found, you really need to do to defeat monsters, and it makes it a lot easier to defeat, particularly the lower level monsters. But just want to take it back one more step, though, about the fact that this is a tutorial mission. I mean, I had watched a video online to get an idea, but it was very much open book to page one, read paragraph one, which tells you to read the first part of the legend card.
Indeed.
Then you read another little bit, then it tells you to flip another legend card. And it really has that video game tutorial style where the first little bit of the mission is just teaching you how to move around.
Yeah.
And how the time track works, where with that, as I mentioned, the 7 daylight hours and the 3 night hours. So each time you make one move, that's going to use up 1 hour. You go around the table basically where you take a turn. Now, a turn could be you might move one up to 7 spots, but then that's the end of your turn. If you land with the token, you stop. Then it'll go to the next player's turn. Then when it comes back to you again, you can flip over that token for free. So that's a free action you can get. You can also, you can basically pick up anything that's in your square. You can use an item that's in your square. You can empty these wells, which give you more willpower.
Which is incredibly important.
Yes, which is effectively like your hit points.
Yeah, and that affects also the number of dice that you will roll, because the higher your willpower means you roll more dice, which is incredibly important.
You've got these clever little player boards, double-sided.
Yes.
And the reason they're double-sided is you've got the male dwarf on one side, the female dwarf on the other side. And there's little standees that are either male or female. So each character has a male or a female version, which is very nice. And the board has, you track your willpower, you track your strength, where you can buy, sort of like training, you can buy strength points. And that's the number that you're adding to the gold, so it is quite important. You've each got a special ability, and they're all a little bit different. And then you've got a sort of a picture of your hero and little squares and circles where you can upgrade your character.
Which is cool. And the fact that it is, if I'm going to buy a helm, it goes on the square that is dotted around my head. It's going to go on my head token. And I've got a shield, and it's going to go on my arm, which is in the shape of how my arm would be if I was holding a shield. I reckon it's just a nice thematic touch, and I think it speaks all the way back to the fact that Michael Menzel is an artist first and a game design second.
Yeah, and this is a really beautiful-looking game. And again, that thing where you're sticking the bits onto your character, again, it reminded me of a video game. It reminded me of your Skyrims, your Dungeon Sieges, your Diablos, all those sort of things.
Oh, there's a million of them.
You know, but one of the things you love to do is you love to upgrade your character and get good stuff. Now, there's not thousands of things you can get, but there's things like a falcon.
I know.
That can carry bits of can share stuff with other characters.
Yeah, falcon, you
have one guy who's an archer, but the other characters can buy a bow, and it goes instead of a shield or a sword or something. So, yeah, you do have that way to customize your character, which, again, harkens back to the video game. So the tutorial legend, it takes you first through the movement, then through the fighting.
And admittedly, the first part of the tutorial is over and done with in one day in the game time, which is brilliant. The fact that this doesn't drag on, admittedly, because most of the mechanics of this game aren't complicated, someone like everyone listening to you who has played some games before will be able to pick this up, no sweat whatsoever.
Yeah, and look, we could have started at Legend 2 if I'd been bothered to do any sort of preparation.
Which clearly.
But, I'd had a busy week, and I just actually thought, let's experience. Because I did remember when I played this at the Hogs Night, it would have been 4 or 5 years ago, played it the one time. We didn't do the tutorial legend. because we're experienced gamers, we jumped straight into a normal legend. And I remember having that feeling of, I'm not really sure what's happening here. And I don't think it was that the person who explained it didn't explain it very well. I think it was just the way that the legends are designed. I think they're sort of automatically assuming that you're going to play that tutorial. And even the rule book, it's not your standard rule book. It's your tutorial one, which is like 4 pages, and then your reference book.
Exactly.
And it's not laid out in any way like a rule book where you sort of step through it. It's really designed as a reference where you look up particular things.
Which I do like because, it, like you said, it walks you through the game mechanics itself. The first whole introductory level, which we did the very first part, which took one day of game time, and it was over and done with, and we'd learnt the mechanics. We then went into the vast meat of the first scenario, which was we had to protect the castle, and then we had to do some other stuff in order to win. And this is where the balancing act between we want to kill all these squishy gores or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But we can't because every time we squish one, the track just progresses so quickly. So we're not going to be able to do our final goal in the time that we need to do it. So we need to sort of coerce the board a little bit more and really have good conversations at the table about, well, Mark, you're going to do this thing and your special ability as the dwarf or whatever is going to allow you to go to the well or go to the merchant or do this, and your job is to do XYZ, whereas I'm a bit more of a fighter, so I'm going to go and try and hold off these hordes while you ultimately try and accomplish the end game goal. And we've got another player here. What are they going to do? Are they going to team fight or are they going to do something else? I really enjoyed that. It was good because the mechanics of this game, and admittedly just the first scenario, are really basic.
Yeah. And from what I can see in a little bit of reading, it does introduce further rules later on.
Good.
In particular scenarios. And they do really step up the difficulty. And I think that's great. Now, the game comes with the tutorial mission, legend, I should say, four other legends, and then word do they use to describe it? It's basically blank cards.
Do-it-yourself
legend. A do-it-yourself legend. So it doesn't come with, you know, it's not a huge amount of replayability. You know, I was a little bit concerned about that. I did pick this one up secondhand. But then I discovered you've got Legends of Andor, the Star Shield, which is a small box expansion that has one legend, but that particular legend has a couple of twists where partway through, instead of having one legend card that might be card A or B or C or whatever, it has five different ones, and you shuffle them and put one in, and then the next step has the same. So five. That's potentially 25 different legends from that one small box. Has a few other little things. Then you have Legend of Andor New Heroes, which adds, surprisingly, four new heroes.
There you go.
But what that does, it expands the game to six players.
Cool.
Then you've got Legends of Andor Journey to the North, which is a large box expansion, adds another new double-sided board, and it adds sea travel. So the original double-sided board, you've sort of got the countryside on one side, and you've got a more dungeony one on the other side. With the Journey to the North, you've got sea travel, you've got a little wooden ship you travel on, and the movement apparently works a little bit different. You've got four more new legends and two more new heroes. It's all interchangeable. There's a two-player game, which this game is originally created by Cosmos, and they have that two-player line, obviously. So there's a two-player game with just two characters that's a card game. That's a standalone game, but it's set after the events of Journey to North. But then there is just about to be released Legends of Andor The Last Hope.
Oh, there's more coming.
Which is a standalone, large box standalone game and expansion, which carries on the story. So you get another seven legends, another double-sided board, more heroes, and they all can interact with each other. And then there's also coming Legends of Andor Dark Heroes, which is another heroes expansion, which basically expands that new game to six, but also you can use those heroes with the other games. There's also about four downloadable free official legends on legendsofandor.com, which is a great website for all the stuff. Plus, I think there's another three or four fan-created ones. There's a heap of promos that have been released at Essen and other game conventions and stuff. So there's a lot of thing out there. There's a lot of things. There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of bits out there to really expand your Andor adventure.
Which clearly means for a game that is now at least 5 years old, still has a lot of love in the gaming community. You look at it on BGG, it is the number 89 thematic game of all time. So clearly there is a big fan base for it. But look, we'll have to stop that there.
Yes.
We're going to switch.
I just keep talking.
I know. We're going to switch into the storytelling games, because this one is all about the story that you and your fellow travellers create. I'm sure there are some more games that do that along the way,
I've got a list of a couple.
Anyway, you are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99 with thanks to Area 52. We will be back after these songs and talk more board games, more card games, more role-playing, and we'll go from there. Well, there you go. That was Jarrow with James Impala, not Tame Impala.
I have no idea.
Oh, I don't know either. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Still talking board games, card games, and all of those bits and pieces. Now, Mark, would you like to tell us a story?
Well, Garth, I will tell you a bit of a story. I'll tell you a bit of a story about games that tell a story themselves.
Ah.
So, obviously, Legends of Andor is a great example, although, as we said, it's a little bit different because it's a Euro storytelling game.
Yeah, and to me, it kind of feels like my first adventure card game or my first adventure dungeon quest or something like that. I could quite comfortably go and play that with my kids.
Yes.
Because it's a co-op, so you can all work together. The stories are not violent or graphic or anything that is offensive to anybody.
Yeah, and it doesn't have your massive, ugly miniatures or anything. They're just cardboard standees.
Yep. So I reckon this is a great introduction for a lot of people in our hobby who have played a lot of gateway games and just your more Catans and Carcassons and all of that kind of stuff and are looking for that story-based game. It's a good stepping stone before you get into probably some games that you may talk about.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is, so I brought this game secondhand through one of those Facebook game selling groups from a fellow Australian gamer. And what had me be interested in that game was the fact that we had started playing a game which we're going to talk a lot more about probably over the next couple of weeks, This War of Mine, that we finally received. And that had me thinking about, oh, I really enjoy games with a story. And so while Legend of Andor isn't quite one of those games with the, and, you know, the classic being Tales of the Arabian Nights with the paragraph book, the Book of Legends, where you're scrolling through and there's, you know, I think on that one there's 1,800 paragraphs or something.
It's a ridiculous amount of text.
Yeah, and you really are crafting a story with all the little bits and pieces as you go. I mean, to me, that's the storytelling game, and we see that a lot more now with and I did struggle with whether these fit into storytelling game, but it's like the Sherlock Holmes consulting detectives.
Sure.
There's the new one, I think, Mythos Tales, where you're sort of solving a mystery, but as you uncover the mystery, you really are telling a story about what's happening.
Yeah, that's true.
And I guess, you know, in Legend of Andor, you've got an objective you're trying to fulfill, and as you fulfill each objective, you uncover a bit more about the story. Similarly, in those Sherlock Holmes consulting detectives type games, you are uncovering a story as you're looking for clues for an objective
as
well. Yeah, they're quite
similar.
Yep. And, you know, so similarly with This War of Mine, you've got a paragraph book and you've got objectives you've got to fulfill. And as I said, we'll talk about this a lot later. It made me then think of, well, you know, Your Robinson Crusoe and First Martians, like, they're a Euro game, but really as you go through each round, where usually there's like a round objective, you're, again, there's a story or a narrative that's unraveling, you're learning more about your character and where they are and what they're doing.
Yeah, I think a big difference with particularly Robinson Crusoe and the Mars version is that generally your story is developing because things are bad. There's no story where you go, oh, you have found a collection of fluffy bunnies. They're all really happy to see you. You eat them and you can survive another night without anything going wrong.
No.
That doesn't happen.
No.
In Robinson Crusoe, it is, oh, there's a fierce tiger and it's broken into your camp and it's stolen all your food and it's wounded somebody. Or the weather is abysmal so that your whatever it's called, your roof, your palisade is destroyed and everyone goes hungry because your food's gone off and someone gets injured. Or, oh, you're stuck outside and you get attacked by a poisonous plant. Oh, you're injured, sorry. And that's how the story progresses, is through hardship.
Yeah, and adversity and how you deal with that adversity.
Yes.
And it's funny, when I look down my list of games, even though there's stuff like Mice and Mystics and the new Unstuffed Fables, clearly when you play those games, you're not going, and then something really happy and fun happened and they found a T-shirt with a Rubik's Cube on it and they all got excited and then they found a free lunch voucher. You know, like, it's all about bad things are happening and how you deal with those bad things. And there were a couple of others that came to mind.
Sure.
Mice and Mystics, I haven't played, but you've played that one.
Yeah, I've played it quite a few times, and I actually swapped Android, the big that I had, with Trent. So I now have his copy of Mice and Mystics. He has my copy of Android because I think my kids really, really enjoy that game. Maybe not quite yet.
Yes.
But in a couple of years' time, when they've grown up a little bit, Mice and Mystics would be my first introduction to that style of game with them. I wouldn't go to Legends of Andor.
Yes.
I would go with Mice and Mystics because it introduces a lot more of the gamer mechanics. It's very, very similar to Descent, which I'm sure is on your list.
Yes, absolutely.
But it is a lot more simpler to pick up, and generally the missions are a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I love it. I have a lot of time for my
Mystics. Yeah, and I guess that leads me to another genre of what you'd call storytelling games, which is the campaign game, which I guess is what Andor is, although there's stories within each legend, and then there's the overall campaign. So you've got Descent. You've got things like another one I'm excited to play soon, Seventh Continent, which is one of these Dexploration or like adventure card games, and similarly Pathfinder and the Warhammer adventure card games. They're sort of unfolding a story. Again, sometimes there's room for a lot of character development. Sometimes it's a very linear story.
I'm going to be very curious about Seventh Continent because it talked itself up a lot, which is not surprising because it ran a Kickstarter campaign. But I distinctly remember it saying that at the end of a campaign, you can have a board, for lack of a better term, because it's all cards,
yes,
that is in excess of 2 meters long. That's how big the area is that you're going to be exploring during this campaign. So
that's a Leon lot of exploring.
Has it. He finally got it. It only came through to his house, oh, let's say a fortnight ago.
Yes.
No one's got it to the table yet. There are in excess of 1,000 cards.
Yes.
It's got a save mechanic, so you don't have to try and do it all in one night. I'm very curious to see how that goes, if it lives up to expectations.
Well, it's clearly it's at the generating top of the a lot of buzz.
Oh, there you
go. It is number one on the BGG hotness.
Yeah, wow.
And look, another one that definitely fits into this category, I think.
Okay.
Because we don't know a lot about it. Gloomhaven.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we didn't back it at the first round. We backed it on the second Kickstarter campaign, you and I, because we're both, like, quite excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's number three on the hotness, but it's number four game overall of all time.
I can't believe that, because I remember we talked about how during the Kickstarter campaign, it just kept going up and up.
It started at 12, I think, and it ended up at 7 or 6, and now it's at 4.
If you go on to its actual page on Board Game Geek, it must be the third or the fourth top strategy game of all time already.
It's three for strategy.
And that's based on its first edition. It hasn't even got the second edition out to people yet.
It's two for thematic games.
Wow. So, look, I really, really, really hope that as someone who has played a lot of these styles of dungeon crawls games, that it lives up to that, because there are around 100 different campaigns in this game.
Yep.
The box is about the size of a carton of beer for us Aussies, so it's big. I cannot wait to get into it. Hopefully a month or two from now, we will have to stop the radio show because we will be playing this every night.
Either that or it's going to be Dice Men Come with the Gloomhaven edition. We're going to speak about Gloomhaven for a year. And similarly, I guess, you know, Kingdom Death Monster, that's another one of these campaign-style games. Of course, then you've got, if we talked about the thematic games on Board Game Geek, the number one thematic game on the Board Game Geek website is Pandemic Legacy Season 1. And, of course, the Legacy games, they exactly tell a story. It unfolds over time, and obviously the big difference is that story affects the game in such a way that you can't ever go back and start from scratch again.
Mm.
So, you know, they're another type of storytelling game. One of our favourites, Dead of Winter.
We're waiting for you to say this one.
You know, with the Crossroads cards, they just are like new chapters to the story.
And how good are they? They are such a refreshing part of a board game.
When is the next Crossroads game coming, Plaid Hat?
Oh, John Gilmore, get on it, mate. But it's just brilliant. It is a favourite game. It takes an investment in time, especially if you're playing the Long Night version, and especially in the next edition, which is the
Warring
Colony
Colonies
one. Oh, my God, that is going to be an epic game day kind of game. But, geez, doesn't matter whether you play it with the Betrayer, which we always do, or without the Betrayer if you don't want to go that hardcore, that game and that Crossroads deck and the companion app is just fantastic. And I love the fact that the Crossroads deck can be sort of shuffled out all the really, really nasty stuff or the thing that is a bit more adult so that you can play it with your younger yet still kind of mature kids. I just think a lot of really good, thoughtful design has gone into that game.
Yeah, and look, I mean, the list goes on. Of course, you know, another one that popped in my mind was Betrayal at House on the Hill, or now, what is it? Betrayal at Baldur's Gate, the D&D version, where, you know, a story unfolds, you know something bad is going to happen, and you know someone, maybe, depending on the scenario, is going to be a traitor, but you don't know who it's going to be, you don't know when it's going to happen. There are some scenarios where you have more than one traitor, you know, don't want to spoil anymore, you know, you really don't know where that story is going to go from the start. I love that. And then I thought about all these escape room games.
Yeah.
You know, they, similarly to what we talked about with Sherlock Holmes, where you're trying to solve a mystery, but as you gather more clues, you unravel more of the story. I think the escape room games, some of them to a more extent, some of them to a lesser extent, do the same thing, where all of a sudden you discover, oh, maybe there's a reason that I'm trapped inside this room.
Yeah, and that's just, again, it's clever. Now, another thing that came to my mind, and this harks back to BorderCon a couple of years ago, yes, is when we played Above and Below.
Yes, so, I had that. I had Above and Below and Near and Far on
correct.
My list, yes.
And these are the kind of newer, again, lighter versions of Arabian Nights, where you've got a board and you're telling a story as you go, but you're always referencing a book which has got a little, you know, paragraph here and there of what your character has done or what accomplishments they've had or what failures they've been a part of, and it's really, really enjoyable. I think so many games would benefit from just having that little companion which creates story, yes, in an otherwise just your standard board game.
Yeah, and look, I guess there are, and, you know, this is a massive genre, but if you look at your sort of your Arkham and your Eldritch Horrors, or we mentioned Android, mm-hmm, any of the Flying Frog type games, like, of course, they're very thematic and they're telling a story and it's told through the cards that you flip over and they'll all add a little bit to the story. But I guess that story is more, I guess, random because, you know, you've got huge stacks of cards, yes, you're pulling out ones. They're sort of weaving a narrative together, but it can be a bit all over the place, whereas something like Andor or This War of Mine or Descent or Pandemic, you know, they're all, the story is a lot more scripted where it's going to take you, although you do still have a lot of options.
Exactly. Now, we obviously haven't talked about a million in billion different games that offer this, but I guess the way I'm really excited to see our hobby progress is where the app integration can take storytelling. I think a lot of us have seen how much benefit Descent can have by having the app.
Yes.
Or Mansions can have with the app.
Oh, yes. There's another one we haven't
mentioned. And look, you know, Imperial Assault as well. What a great game within the Star Wars universe, but having an app for that whenever that is around is going to be fantastic to create more story as
well. Yeah, and look, I'm sure we'll talk about it more with This War of Mine.
We'll have to.
But, you know, that has a companion app as well where you can, rather than flicking through the book to find the paragraph, you can type in the paragraph number and it'll bring it up on your iPad or iPod. Now, I did think, I don't know where I got this from, I did think that what was in the app was recorded versions of the paragraphs. And to me, I guess it's going to be expensive, but, you know, there's a potential missed opportunity because how much richer is your story when you've got voice actors that are narrating it? And interestingly, I didn't mention with Legend of Andor, I think at Essen this year, they're bringing about Die Legend von Andor, Die Bonus Box.
Ooh.
I hope they bring out the English version, but it's got...
Yeah, what's bonus box in English? Yeah. I don't quite get it.
It's got four new legends. It's got a CD soundtrack.
There you go.
And a whole bunch of other things. But, you know, Flying Frog, they have the CD soundtracks for their game. And I remember the first time I saw that, I was like, oh, how hokey is this? But it adds another whole level of creating an
immersive
environment,
experience.
Creating that immersive experience in your story. And I guess that's what, you know, having a great narrative does. It immerses you in the story. And I must admit that no matter how much I love my heavy Euro games that make me really think, I love that immersive theme experience. And while I'll sit and play something like Eldritch Horror for 3 or 4 hours, even though it drags, because I love being in the story.
Yeah, look, it's that lovely stepping stone from board game to RPG. So anyway, we're going to stop now because otherwise we'll just keep going and keep going and keep going.
Oh, look, there's more on my list. Yeah.
I bet. Anyway, you're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Thank you, Area 52, for your sponsorship. We'll be back after this song and we'll talk some iOS.
That was Looper J with Game. A very aptly named song, that, here for the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with myself, Mark, and Garth.
Yeah.
Brought to you with thanks from Area 52, our local friendly game store. Have you seen the new Funko Pops from Season 7 of Game of Thrones, Garth?
No.
You can get your...
Do you get zombie, Jon Snow's ass?
You can get your zombie Viserion that you can ride with your white, what's his name? The Night King.
There you go.
And they're awesome.
Okay, I'll
just
take
another thing you can get from Area 52.
I have zero interest in poppy pop pop pops. But anyway,
I love them, but they're just, if I bought one, I'd have to buy them all.
Anyway, let's talk about something that doesn't cost money except when it does, which is iOS electronic gaming.
Hey, Garth.
Yes?
We've got a competition to draw.
Oh, we do, don't we? Well, how about I be super quick then?
Okay.
Because we need to have time to announce the winners of our Grail Games competition. So stay tuned. Anyway, look, I just wanted to touch base again a little bit about Burgle Brothers because I've been playing that a bit in the last couple of weeks. Tim Fowle's game, I talked about it a couple of weeks ago. I just want to say, geez, it's good.
Yes.
It's really fun. It is one of those games where if you are stuck in the doctor's office or on a commute on a tram or a bus or something and you've got about, let's say, 15 minutes to 35 minutes to kill, it is awesome. It just saves you all the hassle of the board game.
Yeah.
You can play one, two, three, or four characters all by yourself. You can play a whole bunch of different map layouts, which I did talk about, but you've got map layouts like the standard bank heist or the office heist, or you've got a citadel that you can go through, or Fort Knox, which is a bit more extreme, or an obelisk if you want to try and keep those maps really short, but you've got to go up a few more levels.
Oh,
I just want to encourage people to go and play that game because it is really, really good fun.
So I am becoming a bit of an iPad man, but I saw you when we met up at the pub beforehand. I saw you playing it on your phone, and look, maybe it's because I'm a little bit older, you know, and I've got my reading glasses.
Yeah.
What's it like on that much smaller screen?
Oh, look, I've got my glasses too, which I wear all the time. But the good thing is the maps are what take up 95% of your screen.
Yep.
There's not really much else of a user interface because admittedly the game itself is pretty simple. On your turn, you've got four actions and they are moving or peeking or doing a special ability or trying to roll some dice to crack the safe.
Yeah.
So the game itself is pretty straightforward. So once you learn it, and again, it's got a bit of a tutorial to walk you through it, it's not an issue whatsoever.
And it's not like it's a game with lots of cards that have lots of text on or anything like
not
that.
Not at all. Yeah. You can easily see what card you're on, what the special ability of that card, whether it be stairs or an atrium or whatever the case may be. Anyway, that's quickly. Second of all, Mark, seeing as you are a bit of a fan of Freitag, the Freedom and Freeze solo game that I talked about a little while ago.
Ja, ich bin ein großer Fan.
It's grande. That's not German. I just wanted to highlight that there was a little update announced in the last couple of days, which introduces the King of the Island achievement. Now, those eagle-eyed people who have the app will have noticed that when you go to the main menu, there is basically play the game and achievements, and then there's this King of the Island box, which when you click, just said coming soon or nothing.
Yeah.
But what they've started is a fortnightly competition where it's only open to the first 1,032 people or something, so you've got to be quick to get in. But basically, you then have 2 weeks to have a crack, go for your best score. Yeah. Whoever gets the best score out of the 1,000-odd entrants gets to be King of the Island for the 2 weeks until the next King of the Island competition.
And what do you get for being King of the Island?
I'm sure Freedom and Freeze says, thank you.
So worth it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's just a couple of little quick things. But Kickstarter and iOS, sometimes they love each other, sometimes they don't. But there is a really exciting project on at the moment, which is Evolution. Now, Evolution has been out since 2014.
Oh, yes.
And it is a really, and I'm not going to say it, the I word that you have used quite a lot this episode.
Yes.
But it is a very unique style in that each of you are playing competing species.
Yes, I have played this game, the card game version.
Yeah, and the whole point of the game is to basically, like in Survivor, you've got to outwit, outplay, and outlast.
And
you've
out-eat.
Got to out-eat and evolve so that you are the last race standing, for lack of a better term.
Yes.
Now, it's been a successful game. It's had the flight expansion and a few other bits and pieces brought out. Only recently, it has just come out on Kickstarter for the video game version.
Ooh.
Now, video game meaning iOS, Android, Steam, PC, Mac, and not surprisingly, you can get the board game version as part of your pledge. They're only going for about $40,000 US, and it's been going for, let's just call it 2 days. They're already at $32,000, so they're going to fund. And it looks really, really great. It highlights the fact that you can get a game over and done with in about 10 or 15 minutes.
Oh.
If you watch the video, it's got some actor or some voice software that is a dead ringer for David Attenborough.
Oh, really?
And that is cool, because yes. David Attenborough, living yes. legend. It looks like
the
a great fun game.
The climbs onto a rock and selecting its partner. It casts its gaze over the local spider and it eats it up.
Exactly.
Might have been me.
No, it wasn't. It sounded like David Attenborough. Anyway, and similarly, and this ties in very beautifully with our Grail Games competition, there are so many Dr. Reiner Knizia games that are iOS that are now on sale.
Oh, really?
So, just to rattle off a few, Medici, which Grail Games has released in an English-speaking version
yes.
in the board game and the card game version. Le Havre.
Oh, yes.
Which is the French harbour game, which so many people like. You've got...
Reiner Knizia didn't do Le Havre, though.
I don't care, but you've got
yes.
that he did.
Yes.
You've got Tigris or Tigris and Euphrates.
Tigris and Euphrat.
Which I kind of struggle to like the game
yeah.
because even with the new version, I still think it's ugly.
It is a classic, though.
It is a classic, and maybe it's because it was the very first game where I suffered Dr. Reiner Knizia's we're going to score the worst of
yep.
all of the things. I hated that.
Yeah.
But anyway, all of his games are $1.50 Australian on the app stores,
wow.
be it the iOS or the Android version. So,
I'm going to have to pick up Ra because
yeah.
I've always wanted to try it. Now there's that new, was it Fantasy Flight version?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Looks good, but it comes with so much bling now, it makes it expensive.
So anyway, I'm really excited about that because you can pick up a couple of fantastic games for $1.50 each, which is awesome because I'm a tight ass.
Okay, now, it sounded like before you were trying to take over my Kickstarter job.
Yeah.
We're going to run out of time in a minute. We should probably mention the Kickstarter of...
Stevenson's Rocket?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's
smashing it.
It is just gone berserk. It's about to finish very shortly, I think. But it's just gone crazy. Grail Games got another hit on their hands, that's for sure.
Well, look, there is a big, big, big target. They are currently at about 65 grand with mm-hmm. a week and a bit to go. If they can get to $90,000, which, look, the way Kickstarter works, it probably should because
yeah.
it's all about the first couple of days, all about the last couple of days, you're going to get a third map thrown in for free.
Oh, yeah.
It's only $70, including shipping. You get a discount if you've backed some previous Grail Games. So it's a bit of a no-brainer. You and Trent, you both like train games as much as you hate to admit it.
Yes.
So this is the one for you. So there's plenty more, but we need to announce the winners for
this
competition.
Yeah, sorry, that's why I was sort of rushing you on, because they've done awesomely with that Stevenson's Rocket campaign. They've done awesomely by us, giving us two copies of King's Road and one copy of Medici to give away to our fantastic listeners. Now, Garth, have you got there the one of the winning entries that just went above and beyond? Do you want to read it out?
Oh, thanks for putting me on the spot. Can you give me a moment to potentially
well,
bring it up on
okay,
my device?
Okay, well, you bring it up. Let's just say that the two winners of King's Road are Tao Moretz and Rudolph Valentino. I don't think that's his real name, but I'm sure that Rudolph and Tao will get in touch with us via Facebook Messenger or message us on our Facebook page, same thing, and give us their postal addresses.
Yep.
And then the lucky winner of Medici the card game is Jenny Luck.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
There you go. Jeez, she's lucky girl. So look, Jenny, for example, would be Queen of Seven Wonders.
Ah.
Isn't that nice? She'd have her choice of which civilization she'd be ruling over. And she loves the varied tactics she'd have to employ to progress her society.
The tactic.
Yes, a tactics. Better than tic-tac anyway. So look, we had lots and lots of entries. I'm really happy with the way the competition went. And I really want to say a big thank you to David and Grail Games.
I was going to say, people clearly are loving those Grail Games
yes.
by the number of entries we had.
Exactly right. So how about we do a little bit of service and just read out Rudolph's entry?
Oh, yes.
Just because Rudolph...
In the last minute we've got.
Exactly right. So, surveying the palace grounds, I look out across the luscious date palms and exotic creatures, a lazy camel resting in the shade. The sight of a red-robed assassin sends a small shiver down my spine, but I quickly remember they owe their allegiance to me. The royal gold lining their pockets ensures it. The builders too are busy with new wonders, keeping their egos stoked. Wait, wonders? A hastily erected fourth wall blocks my sight in that direction. The builders are efficient. He must consult the elders. You! Where are my bone men? Do they come? The vizier ducks as it, fearing my capricious wrath. They cometh not, my sultan. Trent is making music to appease the gods of the heathens. Garth is organising a travelling caravan. And Leon is producing chocolate for the Merchants Guild. Or dying. It's always one or the other. I scowl at him. Who cares about them? I need to consult with Mark, the elder. My liege, he is not available. He had an unfortunate accident with some dye. I sigh, deeply, unperturbed. I have an alternative. Very well, bring me a slave. A cold wind blows. A what, Sultan? We don't use the S word anymore. What do you mean by that? The vizier huffed, self-righteously. It's culturally insensitive, my liege. The slaves are so last edition, they've all been replaced by fakirs. And I love it. Great entry, Rudolph.
Yeah, well done. We have absolutely run out of time. Congratulations to our three winners. Get in touch with us. Give us your postal addresses. We'll get those games out to you. Garth,
bye.
We're going to go.
This has been another episode of The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, offering comics, books, card games and board games for the whole family. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au. And find us online at thedicemencometh.com.